This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, a show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, joy, joy.
Hello and welcome to Well, Well, Well yet again on this lovely Tuesday, August the 11th. Brought to you by the Well, Well, Well team at the Victorian AIDS Council, midday through to one. I'm Jack and my co-host today is Penny. Sorry, it's Jesse. Oh, we were just talking about Penny Wong. It's Jesse Wong. Jesse Wong, my colleague Jesse Wong. And it's Tony, who's helping us with panelling. Thank you, guys.
Hello.
Welcome. How are we all today?
We're good. Jesse? If you get my name right, you know. But
It's okay, love. It's okay. I'm very glad to have Anthony back with us. It's been a while since we've seen his beautiful face.
Oh, thank you, Jesse. And I'm looking forward to today's show. Lots of interesting stuff.
Lots of interesting stuff. Know, because we're really actually talking about holding the man, but from a slightly different perspective. We'll come back to that. We're having a fundraiser at the BAC on August the 20th. We'll come to that shortly. But also, just to recap some of the stuff that happened on the weekend, it was AWOL last week, a week of leather and a little bit of fetish.
Mm. I know, I'm quite jealous because I practically didn't get to go to any of the events, which would have been quite exciting. Although I did go to the barber party, mention quickly on Friday. Yeah. That was at Roxanne. It was held by the Bearded Homos. And it was, I think it was like Bearded Men and techno beats or something, but it was an amazing party and I had so much fun.
And you don't have any facial hair whatsoever.
No, I don't. Just, so it was open to women as well. So
I should stop shaving.
But also, on Friday night was Mr. Laird Leather Competition and our colleague Caleb Hawke was one of the competitors.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Cal was a loser. Bit of a loser. Anyway, but Mr. Laird Leather 2015 is Daddy Steve. Now, Steve's chosen charity is working to reduce suicide in the LGBTI community. And, of course, VAC volunteers were there in the droves handing out VAC tea towels and phone wallets.
Oh, good one. Congratulations, Stephen. Such a good cause.
Now, we'll be coming back to some of the AWOL events later on, but we'll just go over the show today. We talk about all things to do with sex, health and well-being and in the GLBTI community. And Jess, what is planned for today exactly?
Well, most of you may have heard of the film Holding the Man, which is about to be released for general exhibition quite soon. Holding the Man is the story and as a story of Tim and John, who were secondary school sweethearts, two young men in a different time and place. The film is based upon Tim's very powerful, very personal memoir of their relationship. Today, we're going to take a step back to the days at Fairfield Hospital and the AIDS epidemic, which is very important in the story, and we are talking to two former Fairfield Hospital staff, Professor Edwina Wright and HIV clinical nurse consultant Judy Frecker.
That's correct. Both of our guests are part of their, they're part of Tim and John's story too, and the early days at Fairfield Hospital, and who they knew the boys as patients, and more importantly, knowing them as just two more young men confronting one of the most terrible times in anyone's life, being diagnosed as HIV positive in the 80s, and knowing all the fears and but the strengths also that came from those young men in that era. I've heard some very interesting interviews by the producer, the director, the actors, but today we're looking at the lives of Tim and John through a different prism, through the people who were there at the coalface in the days of the epidemic. So that's the context of the film, and that's the context of Tim and John's life.
So it's going to be pretty interesting today. We'd really love it if you got in touch with us to join the conversation. And as always, there are a plethora of ways you can get in touch with us. You can go onto facebook.com/ well, 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 joy, or you can call 1-300-JOY-949, or most easily send us an email onair@joy.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kylie Minogue, also known as Kylie from Camberwell, and I'm a proud Joy member, number 285.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and we're discussing Holding the Man. And today our first guest is Professor Edwina Wright from the Alfred Burnett. Edwina was a doctor back in the days of Fairfield Hospital, and also a technical advisor on the film Holding the Man. And incidentally, Edwina is one of the very few people I know of who has already seen the film. Edwina, welcome to Well, Well, Well.
Thank you.
And we've got Jesse and Tony here who's going to help us with some questions.
Hi, Edwina.
Okay. Hi,
Edwina. How are you today?
Hi. Well, thank you.
Good. I would just like to start off with asking you, what exactly does a technical advisor on the film mean, and what was your role there?
Well, it was an incredible pleasure, actually. I got to work with the people who are responsible for the sets and the props and creating an environment that was as authentic as possible to reflect both Fairfield Hospital and St. Vincent's Hospital in Sydney.
Okay.
So they were already, you know, well down with what the world was like because they'd done so much research. But I guess my job was to come along and just say, yes, this is exactly how it looked, or this would have been the environment. And in particular, I don't want to have a spoiler, but there's a particular procedure that occurs in the scene, which is really technically a difficult procedure. And we had to work on that, showing how that procedure would have been done and making it look as real as possible. So we went to the Alfred Hospital and spoke to one of the cardiothoracic surgeons, and they showed us all the right equipment. And, you know, the one of their experts then built a kind of a model which allowed you to believe that, you know, this was really happening. So we got down to some very technical aspects of some of the procedural parts of the film.
Okay.
And I guess I was there to try and you know, make that as accurate as possible for them.
Yeah.
Well, where were the hospital scenes filmed?
As I remember, the one that I was involved in was down around behind the University Royal Melbourne Hospital around Parkville. Yeah, as I remember, and also in parts of Caulfield Hospital.
Oh, too. Yes.
So, given that you actually worked at Fairfield Hospital in the early days, did it bring back any memories for you about those times?
Yeah, it did. It was really powerful, I suppose. Visually, a lot of the people who came to act as the inpatients, for example, we were able to get some people who were, you know, I guess some of them were openly HIV positive and had lived with HIV and AIDS for a long time. People like David Menadue, who was a star in the film as an inpatient, and others. I think were probably just thin people who fitted the bill. So there was this visual sense of incredibly, especially with their makeup on, very unwell people, cachectic or, you know, extremely having lost a large amount of weight. And then when you put them in the actual ward and had them in the beds and exactly the same old-fashioned beds that we used to have at Fairfield Hospital, it was very evocative. But also I think some of the, you know, want to be invited to work with the crew, you had to have read the script, and so you actually began to dive into some of the emotional aspects of what was happening to people, and especially people who were lovers and losing each other.
Yeah.
And as young doctors and consultants, you had to observe that. You were very much part of it in a way, but you had to just be there to give whatever support that you could. But it wasn't as if it was unobserved. I mean, we saw a lot of really tough emotional things.
Yeah, it must have been quite powerful.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there were some guys whose, you know, fathers wouldn't even visit them when they were dying of AIDS. They wouldn't come to their own son. You know, that was terrible. That was so hard for people.
Oh, you can imagine. I guess also being taken back to those dark days, if you like, those days at Fairfield where there was very little optimism and terrible family dynamics. Going back to that place probably also reminds us all about how far we've come, how far we are today. The stark reminder about treatments now compared to the dark days.
Well, I think yes, because in those days very few treatments available, and then the ones that became available, you know, were very toxic. So there was that whole issue of not having treatment, and really initially, so you'd treat an opportunistic infection, for example, PCP pneumonia, and the person would pick up a bet and they'd feel better and eat a bit better, and you'd have a short honeymoon period. But without being able to offer them effective antiretroviral therapy, it was really just a matter of time before the next opportunistic illness would occur. That was pretty tough to watch.
You were just keeping one step ahead, sort of dealing with things as they emerged with limited options, wasn't it? Limited.
Yeah, very limited. It was really, you know, and it seemed very daring to, when I would meet the occasional patient whose doctor had somehow got them on AZT plus DDI. You know, that was seemed incredibly daring to be combining two drugs, you know. And yet those doctors, in a way, knew what they were doing, at least, you know, conceptually, needing at least more than one drug.
And, Edwina, was that at the time because of the, I guess, ignorance around the illness and how to effectively treat it? Was it a time also of just experimenting and trying things out and combining medications and that sort of thing?
No, it wasn't. It was, but it was done rigorously. So there, Jenny Hoy, who's now the head of the Victorian AIDS Service, really led and built up the clinical research unit at Fairfield Hospital. And we ran and were part of large national and international clinical treatment trials that were, you know, placebo-controlled. So you didn't know if the patient was on a real antiretroviral or not. So there was actually a lot of rigorous clinical trial medicine done. But occasionally, I think there were some doctors who just thought, no, I'm going to try something different. And that's what happens in scenarios when things are fairly desperate. So, no, it was actually well-measured approach that we took, yeah.
Okay, working on the film as you did, was there a sense that the accuracy was appropriate, that is, to the issues that you faced, the uncertainty perhaps, and given there was little or no treatments, but as well as the physical settings? Did they capture the moment well for you, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think they completely nailed it on so many levels. The environs, the hospital, the illnesses that they had, because they had them. I mean, it's a true story, and the way that they had them. And then the challenges that they both faced, losing each other, and then the challenges of the families around them.
Yeah,
I just think Neil Armfield and his team just nailed it. It's a superb movie.
Terrific.
I think that we should really have a look, watch this movie, not so much just to see how it was, but also an educational perspective for those who possibly don't know what happened back then. Well, at the moment, we're chatting with Professor Edwina Wright from the Alfred Hospital about Holding the Man and its principal characters, Tim and John. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
This is Senator Penny Wong. You're listening to Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and we're discussing Holding the Man with Professor Edwina Wright. Now, Edwina, I understand that you're actually in the book, that you were known to the boys, or Tim in particular, as one of the infectious diseases doctors at Fairfield Hospital.
I've never really been sure. I don't really want to make that claim. There was something about a registrar with blonde hair and red lipstick.
Well, that's you.
I don't know, maybe. But I do have a memory of a couple around a Christmas where they had one of the young, if it were them, then it was John, who was really crook, as it says in the book, with a respiratory problem. And what wasn't clear was, certainly as it's told in Tim's book, is whether he had a chest infection or, in fact, the awful lymph... I think he had lymphoma, and whether that had, in fact, recurred, and I think it probably had. And so I have a vague memory of that, but, you know, there are so many people are involved in making a person... in looking after a person, no matter what their health problem is.
Sure.
And whether it's diabetes or heart disease, and I think, you know, that people, it humbles us all when we get a bit crook and we have to try and navigate the world, whether we're a doctor or John was he was a chiropractor, I think. Who and what we are, we remember people for little things that they give us on the way when we're crooks. So perhaps it was me, perhaps it wasn't.
Now, I've got Judy Frecker next to me. She was a nurse out there, and she's nodding yes when you mentioned the blonde hair and the red lips. Yes, it's you. You're known as the blonde with red lips.
Nice. It hasn't changed. I'm boring.
Still blonde. Boring. Still blonde. We're all blonde.
Yeah.
You saw the film on the weekend. You've mentioned about it but you think it's a good film. How does it affect you as a doctor, capturing that moment or the essence of the moment? Does it make you? Does it have an impact upon you as a physician?
Well, I think one of the things two things I reflect upon. One is that exactly what's depicted in the film in the 80s and early 90s. is happening in other countries all around the world right now. Mm. So we need to remember that people are just coming in with AIDS, CNS, central nervous system illnesses, lymphoma, and you know, unlucky to have very good access to treatment. So this film reminds us that this goes on.
Mm.
And I think the other thing, and this is a personal reflection, which I've discussed with a few of my friends who are also there, and Judy, be interested to see what you think too, but it's that when you went into work, it was just a normal day's work. You'd go into Ward 4 or Ward 2, I think it was, at Fairfield Hospital, and every room had a person in it with a really significant serious illness, which if it was modern day, you know, everyone, you know, you'd be, wow, gee, they're sick. But in fact, everyone was that sick. Mm. And you just got used to this environment. And it's only now when I look back that I realise actually how tough that was for everyone.
And
but we just didn't know it.
When you work in a workplace environment with, you know, when you're under such stress and strain and pressure and, you know, seriously unwell people around, and does that... Did you guys have any systems in place where the staff were able to be perhaps receive some supervision or sort of be cared for in some way?
So that's a really good question. I think it was probably definitely there in an informal sense where you could... At Fairfield, we had a room which was sort of doctor's room. I'm sorry to confess that to you, but it was a place where you could go and actually where you would debrief or you'd talk to your mentors or... But the thing was, what carried you through it was that these young men, they were just so remarkable as people. They were just, it was a privilege to look after them. They were so brave. They were often so stoical. And they were doing everything they could to assist you to look after them. They just made it so much easier for you.
So given that this was during a time prior to antiretroviral treatment and that you were seeing so many sick people through the door and, you know, in this unfortunate circumstance, how did you manage to cope with it and emotionally seeing these young men pass away at such a young age? Did you despair?
No, I didn't despair. I think it was personal because, as I think I've told this story before, when I would go home at night, my mother had very early onset Alzheimer's disease and had a young son from a second marriage. So it was like, oh, this is really hard, because you'd come home from young men with dementia or central nervous system disease to that same thing. What it did, the way I handled it, was to increase my resolve to stay in the area and keep doing and work, and especially doing work in neurological disorders. So I just decided to subsume it into me as a fuel to keep going further.
I think that's a great lesson for us all, Edwina, to take it as a turn it into energy.
I think that's what happened.
Well, thank you, Edwina. We better leave it there. Thanks for talking to us today, for your little insight into Holding the Man and your historical perspective as technical advisor on the film.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you for asking me to talk with you.
No worries, pleasure. Edwina. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well. SMS 0427 JOY 949 or email onair@joy.org.au to have your say.
Joining us for the discussion next for Holding the Man is our guest Judy Frecker. Judy was a fresh and new young nurse back in 1983 when HIV first hit. Welcome to the studio, Judy.
Thanks, Jessie.
And thank you for being with us.
Calling me fresh and young.
Absolutely. So let's transport back to the time of 1983. What was your impression of that moment?
Well, don't think it was a moment. I'd been working there for a couple of years, working at Fairfield. I trained there. And all of a sudden, people were coming in with an unknown disease. I can remember the first patient still that ever came in.
The very first one you remember?
Yes, yep. Very well. And then after that, it was just like a revolving door of young men the same age as us.
Can you describe that moment to us when you met that very first patient?
Difficult. Well, I think because we were working in infectious diseases hospital, we were interested in new infections like that, sort of got us going. But I was just... It's hard to think of the words, but it was just, we couldn't give them anything except look after them and care for people and watch them get sicker and sicker. And
so is there a sense of helplessness?
But I don't think so, because I think it's like Edwina was kind of alluding to, we just did what we did.
Right.
And for some people, we became their family, and we had as awful and as awful as it was back then, we had a lot of fun as well, because we were, initially there was only one ward, and then they had to open another ward, and then there were overflows. But I think we kind of became their family. We had lots of jokes. There was a lot of laughter amongst all that despair, and we just saw people being wasting and wasting away, and it was just, it was terrible. And on reflection, you realise how awful it was, but when we were in it, we just did what we had to do,
and the best.
Well, it wasn't business as usual because it was different. We couldn't give them anything.
All right, yeah.
It's like
you just try your best, don't you?
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of people that couldn't do everything for themselves, and you just tried to make what time they had left better, because you couldn't give them much else. And then when something did come along, everybody grabbed it. So people would take any drug they could to try and make things better. I remember when AZT came in, alarms were going off for Ali 24 hours a day, because people were taking it for every 4 hours. Then, you know, people just look for anything to try and live. And, you know, it was just, on reflection, it's worse than what it was at the time. But I'm sure that sounds a bit odd when I say that. But
The book's about Tim and John, but they were just two of many, many, many patients you had. Was there a degree of... What's the right word? You said there were some positive things and that were happening for the staff. Did some of the patients and clients, did they sort of go along with the sense of humour and the camaraderie?
Oh, sometimes they started it.
Well, they lived there, and it wasn't...
It was like their second home, where I think people felt safe, because back then you couldn't tell people you had AIDS. You couldn't tell... People would just walk away from you. That happened to us as staff. Like, I know it was in a... chemist once and someone said, the girl said, don't you work at that place at Fairfield where they have that disease? And they stepped back. I don't know how thought you were going to catch it.
Lack of education.
But I think once you were in the grounds, I don't know if people have been to Fairfield, they know how beautiful the grounds were, and I think people felt safe when they came in there. But also it had a badge on it as the HIV hospital as well.
So, you know, you were saying that this was like kind of like their home and stuff. And I just want to touch on something that Edwina had mentioned earlier when they're saying not even their own fathers were coming to visit them. Can you explain that a little bit? Why was there such a lack of support from their families?
Well, because sometimes people would come in and they hadn't come out as gay to their families. So they had two different lives, like with their family, and then they had their gay life. So when they got sick and were dying, sometimes these came crashing together.
Yes.
Sometimes some family would have nothing to do with it. Or I can remember there were... Look, I don't know if it's one or 100. I can't remember. But I know there were people who, when they had a funeral, I didn't go to all funerals. Sometimes we did, sometimes we didn't. It was a self-protective thing. But the family didn't want anything mentioned about AIDS, even though they were there all the time, because of what the climate was like outside and in the public arena.
With the judgment and whatnot. Yeah.
And sometimes you had a clash of cultures. Like, I remember one guy when he's dying, his mum's there holding his hand, and on the other side of the room were his friends, his friends from his gay life, and it was kind of new for her, but it's all just a kind of a clash.
Right, so apart from your role as a sort of, you know, medical person in a kind of helping profession, caring profession, where you're looking after people's, you know, physical needs and also emotional needs, and were you kind of a sort of mediator between family members and those sorts of things?
I think all levels of staff, we were to a degree, especially when they were coming visiting times, like, you had to sometimes police it a bit so people didn't clash. But most of the time, I think people just stayed away if they didn't want to come in, and families. And, yeah, some people came in, had no family come in to visit simply because they had AIDS, and it was terrible. Mm. And I like to think these days it's a lot different, but sometimes I wonder if it is.
Yeah, but the one thing about that time that I think about when I, you know, watching movie films like the Normal Heart, and they're holding the man that's come out, and I think about the fear that existed back then because of not knowing. Mm. I'm just wondering if you had to sort of grapple with this very closely in your job.
I think Fairfield's a very special place, and someone once said to me, we were very lucky to work there when we did, as awful as that time was, but I think we were. And I think, yeah, we did grapple with the fear, because when you were outside away from work, and anybody knew where you worked, you'd get all that fear stuff and you're going to get it and, you know, you can breathe it in and...
Don't shake your hand and all those sorts of things.
Yeah. Had a few.
Which and we nobody know else, how ridiculous else. That is now.
Yeah, well, it was ridiculous back. Then. We knew that.
Yeah.
But I think when it's like when you said when you got there, when you were at work, you just got on with it and you just did what you had to do and try to make people's lives maybe a little bit better than what it would be otherwise. And treat them as normal people that were grappling with things.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you were there in a professional sense, but when these people are practically living there, I'm sure that you got to know them on a very personable level.
I think we all got to know them.
Yeah, and you became very close. Was there any kind of support there for you, or if not, how did you manage to cope to separate the professional from the emotional and the personal at the time?
Well, like Edwina said, I think I agree with her, we just got on with it and we had each other. So we kind of kept it, I think most of us kept it in with each other and we would talk. We didn't have the doctor's rooms to go to. But
the old doctors versus nurses.
We used to sneak into the doctor's
room. Oh, okay. Anyway,
we supported each other, but you had no formal supervision or anything till much later. And by then, the people that have been working for the while didn't do it. But they had a little bit of it much later on. But initially, we had none of that. It was just so busy. It was like a revolving door.
Yeah. Judy, we'll be right back. We're talking to Judy Frecker, who's one of the nurses out at Fairfield Hospital during the days, which is captured in Holding the Man, written by Tim Conagrave. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution.
Here's the solution.
Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
This is Well, Well, Well and Joy 94.9, and we're back with Judy Frecker, a former Fairfield Hospital nurse. So, Judy, we just mentioned earlier about the not so much support, I guess, in a formal sense of how to handle that, you know, emotional and personal...
Toll,
yes, thank you. That's the right word that would have of you. So I understand you guys must have created, and all you had was each other, really. But I understand that you guys must still get together because you have such a unique bond or... Something like that people wouldn't necessarily understand who are outside of that bubble.
There are some groups that get together, like the Night Duty, that includes a lot of day staff as well. They have a yearly get together. That's probably the biggest one. But a lot of us are still friends and still catch up. And I think that's with any hospital, though, that's like Fairfield. There's just this bond because it was such a special place to work with, made more special by what happened there, because I don't think what happened there with AIDS has never happened before. Maybe the polio epidemic, I don't know, but this is... I don't think this will happen again.
Or World War Two.
Hopefully it won't,
Now, you've read the book, I presume.
Yes, but not for a while.
But how did you find the book?
It was good. You spend the whole time trying to figure out who's
who. Who's the blonde with the red lips?
The blonde with the red lips. And a friend of mine, a nurse, the Danish nurse, there's a paragraph about hers written phonetically, so it sounds exactly like her.
Put funny. Her accent in it. And you haven't seen the film yet. You'll be going on the 20th of August with us, which is a fundraiser for VAC.
Hopefully I'll be going on the 20th of August.
Well, that's right. And I've got to book the tickets, everybody. I haven't done it yet. But
get onto it, John.
That's right. Are there any warming stories that you recall from the boys in particular, or the boys generally, that you looked after?
There's hundreds. That's why I think we all coped with it. But to think of it all, it's a bit hard. But I remember one fellow who had dementia, and we were nursing on the floor. But every morning we'd fight about who would look after him, because when you'd go in, if you don't know Fairfield, it was a room with a little balcony.
Which ward is this?
Ward 4.
Ward 4, yeah.
So there's a room and there's a balcony straight off it, but there's wire on the balcony. And... every time you'd go into this man, he would start to tell you where he was in the world, because he'd had a lot of travel in his life. So, and because he would actually be there, so the sun would be streaming in and he'd be talking about where he was having breakfast and describe
that. Sounds really kind of amazing, actually.
Yeah, it was just.
Was it a way to cope? Was that his way of coping with?
No, he had dementia. So he.
Oh, he had dementia. Oh, sorry. Well, that would do it. Yeah.
But that does it for you, love.
But for us, what a beautiful way to start the day to hear. Right. And he was very descriptive, so he's very good storyteller.
Yeah. So even in the midst of something awful like age-related dementia that a few of the guys did get, there was a bright side listening to their descriptions around having breakfast in wonderful places.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask, this was and still is, I think, a highly political issue in a number of ways. Being in the midst of it back then, I know we keep sort of going back there and the darkness of it and the challenges back then, but were nurses and medical staff political in any way? Did they sort of organise themselves? Did they get involved in any way in some sort of activism?
We were all very involved in trying to save Fairfield for a start. Was patients and...
patients, and VAC, the nurses, the doctors, yes. They took to the barricades, Tony.
We used to go,
and the
patients used to support us. I think there was a nurses' strike, and then the patients supported us in that.
I remember patients being in their beds at the gates of Fairfield Hospital to try to stop it being closed. Patients in their beds were wheeled out.
Wow.
I just can't...
These momentous times.
That's activism, isn't it?
That's ridiculous.
Yep. But it was very... Like, they were fighting to... Some people were fighting to bring drugs in so that they could be the guinea pigs. They were fighting for their lives.
Okay. Yeah.
And this is captured in the story of Tim and John. Those days, it captures a moment, I think, about the...
And I think it also made doctors and nurses... Because Fairfield was an old hospital and it was very hierarchical. I think it changed that as well, because we had nothing. Like, we all worked together.
Hmm.
Yeah, right. Well, can I just ask on that? I know, it sounds like it was a very complex time. And this might be a complex question, but would you say, because it was largely the gay community, gay male community that was experiencing this, would you say that if, I know this is a bit hypothetical, but if it had been another population out in the community, do you think the response would have been very different? Do you think there was some sort of homophobia sort of embedded into all of this, the response, the reactions, the lack of funding?
I'm not sure. I think maybe because it did affect one particular community, like a gay community, made it much that were treated differently anyway by society, that it brought, that made a much tighter bond. And for us that were working there, like most of us middle class young women, mostly
young fresh nurses.
Young fresh nurses. Yeah. That was a whole new world to us, but all we saw were young people the same age as us, professionals, not professionals, whatever, just coming in, and we knew that they were going to probably die, like 99% die. So I think it created a tight bond. Whether if it was a different, if it affected everybody, whether that bond would have been as strong, I don't know. But I really think because it affected one community so much, they had to fight. They were fighting for their lives.
Judy, we're going to leave it there. So thank you very much coming in and reminiscing about those times. Those times are captured in the book Holding the Man. They are reflected in the film Holding the Man. And I urge you all to, if you haven't read it yet, go out and buy a copy. It's just been re-released with the photo on the front cover. They've tripled the price, of course. But also come, go and see the film. And VAC is having a fundraiser on August the 20th at 6 p.m. at Nova Cinema in Carlton. It's $40, and that covers some refreshments, some finger food and bubbles. Go to the VAC website, vac.org.au, and you can book your ticket via our website. And also there's a Q&A with the actors. So come along on...
Guy Pearce will be there?
No. Yeah, he is in it. Thank you.
You said the actors.
The Tim and John will be there.
Oh, well,
Tim and
that's
John.
Good. That's
the principal characters will be there, not their parents.
If you're listening, Guy, come along.
Can I just quickly jump in there, quickly? Yep. Judy, did you actually know Tim and John?
Yes.
You did. So I can imagine this must be really, really powerful.
But I did know Tim and John. I knew when John was sick, I helped look after him. But I don't... The book's powerful because their story is a lot of people's story.
I can imagine you witnessed a lot of love stories and lovers being broken apart due to this illness as well, so, which is absolutely heartbreaking.
And it's replicated. But the story's replicated.
Yeah, because someone asked me before, but it's hard to remember real specific. You can remember certain things, but there were so many, and it's all, everyone's story is sort of a similar thing.
I do have to say thank you so much for coming on the show, because I mean, I know we have so much to get be involved with Holding the Man, and you know, as a fundraiser, but now I am most definitely going to watch it myself or read it.
A lot of personal stories.
Well, on Joy 94.9.
That's correct. It's well on Joy. And you're with Anthony, Jess and Jack. And we've been talking to Edwina and Judy Frecker, both clinical professionals out at Fairfield Hospital, and looking at the Holding the Man from their perspective about John and Tim's life and so many of the boys back then. We've got a message from Annette. She says, well done, Judy and Edwina. I was a nurse out at Fairfield Hospital in those days. It's brought back lots of memories, good memories, bad memories, powerful memories, and I look forward to seeing the film. Mm. Come along, Annette, on the 20th of August to the VAC fundraiser.
Yes.
Now, we're just recapping some AWOL stuff. That's a week of leather and fetish. VAC volunteers were everywhere all of last week. There was the jock party, the underwear party at the Laird on Monday night. Tuesday was Mad Dog Team. There was a workshop on how to care for your leather, whatever you've spilt on it. I just want leather couch repair jobs done. I don't care about all this other stuff.
I want to try some leather underwear.
I'm a practical man. Anyway, on Wednesday night,
I've seen those jock straps.
On Wednesday night, BJ from Eagle Leather produced two workshops, one on Japanese bondage, which I don't think any of us got to.
Oh, didn't you? You're supposed to bring my boyfriend along.
And the other one was a workshop on impact play. And VAC was on hand ensuring questions relating to bloodborne viruses were answered properly.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday at night, there was Spit and Polish, of course. Friday, Mr. Lead competition, which our Aaron Cal was the competitor, but it was won by Daddy Steve.
Bad luck, Caleb.
And Saturday was Code Black Dance Party. Sunday was the Lead's usual Sunday afternoon tribe gathering. And VAC volunteers were everywhere taking Polaroids.
Gee, talk about being organised.
It was a big week last week. Someone's going to be exhausted.
It was quite a big week. And just before we run off, I'm just going to quickly talk about the Drama Down Under retrospective art exhibition that we've got. It is actually the longest continually running sexual health campaign in the country. I think it's been running for about 10 years now, which is faced by our buddy Frank over there, and is the brainchild of the one and only Colin Petrucci. But
the good thing is Frank hasn't aged, and his shape hasn't altered in all those years.
Indeed.
Still wearing the same pair of white underpants.
A huge thank you so much to Judy and Edwina for coming on with us. It's really brought it back to life. And we look forward to being with you next week on Tuesday at 12 p.m. yet again. This is Well on Joy 94.9 with your host, Anthony.
Yes, thank you, darling.
Anthony, Jack and Jesse. Have a good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.